Sound Living is made possible in part by KSER members, the Boeing Charitable Trust, and Stan and Mary Harrelson, in recognition of Northwest Hope and Healing.
And good afternoon. Welcome back to Sound Living on 90.7 FM KSER Everett. And my guest today on Sound Living is Rebecca Wolf. We will be talking about the advantages, the economical and ecological disadvantages of bottled water. The dirty little secret the two biggest sellers of bottled water don't want you to know is that the water they bottle is tap water. In many cases, people are buying their tap water back for as much as 400 times the price they would pay at the faucet. And most of the plastic bottles that are emptied are never recycled. They end up in landfills or, worse, in the ocean. Everett almost had a bottled water plant. It went to Anacortes. Now there is a new bottled water company that has its eye on your water. And we invite you to join the conversation today with Edmonds resident Rebecca Wolf as we talk about bottled water on Sound Living. Our phone number, 425-303-9070. 425-303-9070. If you'd like to join the conversation this afternoon with Rebecca Wolf as we talk about bottled water. Good afternoon. Thank you.
Good afternoon. It's delightful to be here on such a beautiful day. The mountains are spectacular today with all that snow.
That beauty, though, gave you a little bit of difficulty in getting here, though.
Well, I was slow enough to look at it.
Traffic on a Friday afternoon.
Right.
Nothing ever to discount. When did you get first interested in bottled water as something to be concerned about? And I want to talk about some of the other organizations that you are involved with, each of them concerned with a different aspect of water. But specifically, when did bottled water come to your attention?
I don't know if I can tell you the answer, but I think it had to do with my getting involved with the Alliance for Democracy, which is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that tries to protect the pillars of democracy. And so that it's a huge topic, but it ties into media reform because the media can now, because they control so much of the message and the listening audience, they can tell people whatever they want. So with media reform and protecting the Constitution and freedom of speech and mainly a free press, all of these things tie into protecting us against corporate abuse. And so the principal activity of the Alliance for Democracy is to protect the people and nature against corporate abuse. Not that all corporations are bad, certainly not, that is not the case, but there is a lot of corporate abuse. And that's a huge topic because it has to do with Citizens United and other things that the Supreme Court has.
As a matter of fact, Barbara Ott, I think, is coming down out of Alaska sometime in May.
Ricky Ott, yes. She has done programs with us and for us. And I have several boxes of her books that she donated to whoever wants them, and they're called Sound Truths and Corporate Myths, and we still have plenty of copies. I started to bring some today, but we can get some up here if people want them.
Well, we are working on getting her on this program when she comes into town in May, I believe the 19th, 20th of May. So we'll work on that. So you see a direct causal. Or not causal, but you see a relationship between water and corporate abuse and bottled water specifically? You see a relationship?
I do, because corporations are mandated by their charters to make profits. And water is essential for survival, as is air, and food is too. So food, air, and water are protected under the Declaration of Human Rights that the United Nations has. And now we have corporations that are trying to make profit off of those absolutely essential requirements for survival. So we don't think that water or air and some of our other natural resources should be used for profit. And it's a huge topic, Ed, but I just, you know, it just seems wrong that an ounce of water out of your tap is one two-thousandth of the value of an ounce of bottled water if you externalize the cost of the plastic, the shipping, the wrapping, the packaging, all the, and the labor involved in all that. It's 2,000 times the cost, ounce per ounce.
Well, we'll get into that a little bit later because to a large measure, I would see that as a matter of choice, that if I want to spend $2,000, mm-hmm. 2,000 times the price mm-hmm. of my tap water for a bottle of water, mm-hmm. if I have the money, that's my choice. But I want to hold that off because I want to get into an interview that we have with the author of the book called Bottle Mania. To set the premises, to set the parameters for our discussion here and give a little bit of the background so we don't have to spend a lot of time mm-hmm. on the background here. Because we, in this country, in Europe, in most of the developed nations, buy a lot of bottled water globally. The last figure I saw, the global sales were something like $60 billion a year.
In 1986, I was in France for 3.5 weeks for what the French call a stage, which is an extended workshop. And one of the seminars that we had was about all the different brands of bottled waters and how each one had a distinctive character, personality, and appeal to different segments of the marketing, you know, the marketing public or the marketed public. And so, you know, Vittel and Evian, and there were so many, and so they just didn't use tap water much, and it went back to the time probably when they didn't have safe water, so people got in the habit of using it. So if you're going to talk about Bottle Mania, maybe you could mention too that it's part of the film Tapped. It's addressed in Tapped, and we want everybody to see that film, and they can watch it for free online.
Okay, well, we will get that URL from you here.
Okay.
But first, what we want to do is listen to this conversation with the author of the book, Bottle Mania, Elizabeth Roiti. Lester Graham talked with her about how we got to the point where everyone seems to be carrying a plastic bottle of water and seems to be so distrustful of our own tap water.
I think that the current infatuation with water can be pretty easily marked in 1977 when Perrier crossed the ocean and was introduced and marketed toward urban professionals. But the real innovation was sort of boring and technological. In 1989, it became possible to put water into lightweight, cheap plastic bottles, and that's when more bottlers got in on it, specifically Coke and Pepsi in the 1990s. And they spent hundreds of millions of dollars on advertising. And that's when the market really took off. It went from a value of $115 million in 1990, before Coke and Pepsi got into it with their Dasani and Aquafina water, to a $11.5 billion business in 2007. In most places in this country, the tap water is just fine to drink. A little over 89% of the community water systems in this country meet or exceed federal guidelines. But the advertising for bottled water played on subtle fears or introduced fears that the water wasn't quite perfect. The water bottlers use words like pure, which implies that the other stuff from the tap is somehow impure. And people were ready to hear that message, and they thought there was cachet in the bottle, so they went ahead and moved to the plastic bottles.
Is there a big difference between the different brands of water? I mean, there's so many out there, each with their own campaign.
Right. There are a couple different kinds of bottled water. The big brands, the Dasani and the Aquafina, which are the number one and number two selling brands, are made from municipal tap water. They take the same water that communities are drinking, but they run it through a lot of filters, and then they put it into the sterilized plastic bottles. And then there's spring water, which is the other giant category, and that's the Poland Spring, the Arrowhead, Deer Park, Ice Mountain, and those brands I named are all owned by Nestle, and they are taken from underground sources, very near springs, if not exactly the spring itself. And that water does have minerals in it. It's not the super purified water that Coke and Pepsi have. And then there's mineral water itself, which has even more minerals than spring water. And spring water has to have less than 250 parts of total dissolved solids, and that's the minerals. If it has more than 250 TDS, then it is called mineral water. And most of those bottled waters, you can look on their websites or labels, and they're quite proud of what they have in there, the calcium and the magnesium and whatnot.
Now, there are a couple of things that you touched on before, and one of them is that you said that a lot of the bottled water is just taken from our normal everyday drinking supplies.
Mm-hmm.
So how does this affect us, the person who pays for the water and then gets it out the tap, does it change how we should look at our water supplies?
That's a complaint to some of the anti-bottled water people, is that massive amounts of water are moving out of their watersheds. It's taken from an area in Maine, and then it's consumed in Massachusetts. That water isn't returning to a river or into the ground when it leaves a wastewater treatment plant, which is where water goes when our bodies are done with it. What I write about in my book, I focus on this town in Freiburg, Maine, where Poland Spring comes from, or part of where Poland Spring water comes from. And people there are worried that their water is being taken far away from them, and they worry about how much is left for them. Maine isn't a particularly dry place, but these people worry that Poland Spring will keep pumping and it will hurt their wells, it will hurt their farmers, it's going to affect the river into which this water used to flow and moving elsewhere.
What are the environmental implications then by taking the water that used to flow naturally? I mean, you talk about Poland Springs, you had put your hand right into the water to taste it, mm-hmm. but then a river that was just flowing and then there's a plant that's taking water out of that. What happens on the other end?
Poland Spring claims that it's taking only extra water, and this is an issue I get into in the book because I talk to many biologists who say there's no such thing as excess water. It might be replenished by rainfall, and that's how Nestle and other water bottlers figure out exactly how much they can take. They don't take everything that falls, that everything that is recharged, but the argument still holds that that water used to go somewhere else before they put it into tanker trucks and drove it away, before they put it into bottles. And the spring might look the same, but the area that the spring fed or the wetlands around the spring might be changed. We just don't know, and it takes a long time to find out. So people worry that 10, 20, 30 years into the future, if they continue this pumping, the spring area, the immediate area, might look the same, but the river into which these springs or wetlands flowed might be changed.
I think one of the biggest questions that goes along with all of this is who owns the water that the companies are marketing to us?
Exactly. It's a huge question, and groundwater law in this country isn't exactly clear. And it's really important because as the climate changes, we're going to be having more storms in some places, and drier areas are going to be getting drier. The population is growing, and we have a finite amount of fresh water on this earth, and whose hand is on the tap is going to become increasingly important. Who owns that water underneath?
You say in the book that there are between 30 and 40 billion bottles drunk annually of water. Where does all the plastic go?
Well, we recycle only about 14% of plastic water bottles. The recycling rate for soda bottles is a bit higher for various reasons. But the plastic that isn't recycled is going into landfills and it's going into incinerators and being burned. If it's recycled, it is downcycled. It's washed and shredded and extruded into things like plastic lumber or made into higher value goods like fleece jackets or carpeting or sleeping bag filling.
Should we go back to tap water if we can and just bring a reusable bottle around with us, or should we keep doing what we're doing?
No, we should certainly go back to tap water if we can. You will have far less environmental impact. You will save money. You will show our political leaders that there is support for tap water and that we need to work to protect and improve it. We've got to keep drinking it if we can. If there's something funny about your water, by all means get a good filter and take care of it that way, because again, it'll be much easier in the environment than moving all this water around in little plastic bottles that aren't really going anywhere when we're done with them.
And that was the author of a book entitled Bottle Mania, How Water Went on Sale and Why We Bought It. Elizabeth Reuty was the author of Bottle Mania, How Water Went on Sale and Why We Bought It. And we are talking about bottled water with my guest, Rebecca Wolf. And you're welcome to join the conversation at 425-303-9070. Anything in that report that you would take exception to, other than the fact that maybe some of the numbers, because the conversation is probably 3 or 4 years old, Bottle Mania came out a number of years ago. So any...
No, there's nothing I would take exception to. There are a few points I'd like to expand on a little bit, if you want to.
Let us do that, but let us take a break first.
Okay.
We'll take a break. We'll take a look at the traffic that gave you the problems,
okay.
The weather, and we will be right back here on Sound Living with my guest, Rebecca Wolf. And if you'd like to join the conversation, it's 425-303-9070. And we're back on Sound Living this afternoon. Our topic is bottled water, and it's appropriate for this Earth Day. And if you'd like to join us at 425-303-9070, you have questions about your bottled water. If you have some questions and concerns, 425-303-9070. 9070. Our guest is Rebecca Wolf, and we're talking about bottled water. Would it be fair to say that the concern over bottled water is twofold, ecological and economical? And does one take precedence over the other? If I have the financial wherewithal to spend 2,000 times the cost of my tap water to buy a bottled water, that's my choice, is it not?
Well, when I was working on my last degree at Gonzaga University, we had a class in philosophy, and I remember studying Immanuel Kant and his categorical imperative, and that is, if everybody does it, what will the result be? If everybody did my action, what would be the result of that? And I think that's really an important, it's practical, it's pragmatic, but it's also kind of a good ethical rule to follow. So if everybody bought bottled water, it would just be a really disastrous situation. So I kind of, that's one piece of it. The other part is, yes, it's true, as you pointed out, that people who can afford to buy it and want to buy it, it's convenient and a little bit of a status symbol if you can afford to have your own plastic bottled water, I guess. But there's so many needs for water aside from just drinking. There's cooking, sanitation, growing plants, growing our food, and some operations that do benefit. I think the bottom line for me is if it benefits people and the planet, then it's probably a good use for water. But if it doesn't, if it's not really necessary, then we should take a second look at it, take a hard look at it. And we in our communities need to decide what we want for our communities. And I was talking today with a gentleman who works for the county about the bottled water plant that wants to set up business here in Everett through the Port of Everett. And he said, it's kind of on the idea that you were just talking about, anything that'll benefit our economy, we want. Anything that'll make jobs. And I said, anything? And he paused. I guess he thought, uh-oh, this is a trap. So I just said, well, I'll just be upfront with you. I'm concerned about our natural resources and the kind of community that we want to build here in the Pacific Northwest. And some of us are really concerned about this water plant. And so I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, it does. But would it be then different circumstances if this company, we won't say the name of the company, but let's say this company was going to come in and they were going to take our water and they were going to transport it to a drought-stricken region of the world mm-hmm. for use by the population mm-hmm. there to grow mm-hmm. crops. And would that then lessen the concern in your mind about taking this water that is presented as excess water from our region?
As long as it's not done for profit. I think that when we have an earthquake or some other natural disaster, such as we've had recently in Japan, and as we've had in Haiti with the earthquake, and then cholera set in October following January was the earthquake in January 2010. In October, cholera hit. And I have a personal connection there, and I know how bad it was, the cholera, and how many people who have died, and it's still going on. So there, on a temporary and emergency basis, the United Nations and other groups, NGOs, were taking water in and trying to set up water purification systems. The best thing that can happen in those situations is to make it very temporary and to start building systems to purify the water, to desalinate the water if they're near salt water, or to build systems where people can get their own water from their own resources. This is my personal feeling about it, but I think it needs to be temporary and for emergency uses only, because what happens is the big companies like Nestle and Suez and some of the really big companies go in and they find ways to get the resource, and then they sell it or they sell their services to those people who live there, and some people can't afford it. 1/6 of the world does not have access to safe, abundant water, or even not even adequate water. I shouldn't even use the word abundant, but even adequate water. So 1/6 of us, what, 6 billion people almost? How many are we? Almost 6 billion. So almost a billion people do not have access to good, safe, and adequate water. So just think, you have to project out, as I said, if everybody did it. If these companies take the water and find ways to sell it or to bottle it and sell it, then they're doing it for profit. That's why they exist, is to make profit. And believe me, they make huge, huge profits.
So if we take the profit component out of it, then it really becomes a question of the water. It's not a shortage of water, it's the distribution, much like food. Mm-hmm. There's no shortage of food, there's just a lousy distribution system of it. So there's no shortage of water in this world, there's just lousy distribution of it. And if we're going to change the distribution of the water, it should be for humanitarian rather than profit reasons.
Exactly. And there are some other issues attached to shipping this water, which is what the proposed, I don't think there's any secret, it's public information that the company is called Evergreen, which is kind of ironic. It's Evergreen Bottling Company, based in Bellevue, and they are going to resume their talks, or they're going to have their really initial, they've had some initial talks with Everett, and they're going to resume those talks in May about establishing their 100,000 square foot plant on property that belongs to the port. I think it belongs to the port. Anyway, they're getting it through negotiations with the Port of Everett. Right now, they're, according to the gentleman I talked with this morning at the county office, they're now bottling water in California. He didn't know what brand. I asked him. He said it was in Japanese because it's all going to Japan. So therefore, if that water is not coming back into our watersheds and into our groundwater, it is going to Japan. And, I mean, we do care about people in other countries, of course. So if it goes to Japan, you know, we would hope that it would replenish their groundwater somehow. Or
well, so I think an argument could be made that the Earth is something of a closed system. And there's no more water available now than there was centuries ago, except for the ice, when the ice was flowing. So it really isn't being destroyed, it's just being moved to another location.
Mm-hmm.
So is it really that a significant disaster if we have excess water and they're shipping it off? Does it make a difference if it's going in small bottles or it's going in big tanker trucks or tanker ships?
Well, it's polluting a lot. The shipping is a huge cause of pollution and the increase of greenhouse gases. That's another issue. And we had, whether it's liquefied natural gas or whether it's water, shipping thousands of miles to get a resource to other people rather than trying to capture. Okay, there's rainwater in Japan. There's a lot of rainwater. There are rivers and creeks, streams. They should work on systems to make that available and pure. Of course, now a lot of it is polluted with radioactivity, I guess. But no, we don't. We do want to share. We do care. We do have compassion for people in other nations and other lands, of course. The whole idea is that corporations which make a profit off of this water are making enormous profits, and the plastics that they're using, whether they're in little bottles or big containers, and apparently the large ones are more potent or more toxic than even the little ones. But you probably know this, but if these small bottles of plastic water are in cars and they get heated, they leach a lot of poisons or toxins. And a lot of parents are unaware of this, and they'll have children in the car and they'll have their bottled water in there and it'll get really warm and stay for days. And so those children whose bodies are even more sensitive to toxics are becoming more susceptible to cancers. ADHD apparently is connected with some of the same toxins that are in the plastics. So there's so many negative impacts from this that, it's really upsetting. I sometimes want to scream, but I don't do it. When I walk into even Trader Joe's, which is a store that I enjoy, but I see just rows and rows of bottled water, and I want to say, I want to go and talk to the manager, but I know that wouldn't do any good. You've got to go to the very top and change policies. I go to stores like Costco occasionally, and just acres of bottled water. And you think about where those bottles are going to end up and how much shipping it took to get them here and how much packaging and strapping and cardboard and just such a huge drain on our natural resources.
I want to get into the ecological aspects of bottled water a bit later, but I want to come back to Evergreen, mm-hmm. and also I want to talk to you about Tethys, because mm-hmm. you had a role in convincing the city of Everett to not agree to the Tethys contract, but and right. they went off to Anacortes.
Right.
So tell me what Tethys wanted to do.
Well, I think it, just as with Evergreen, it's ironic that they would name their water bottling company after the goddess of fresh water. Tethys is the goddess of fresh water in Greek mythology. Okay, so somebody, and I don't remember who, sent me a copy of a newspaper article from the Herald about the fact that in a week, I believe it was to be a week, that the City Council of Everett was supposed to approve a contract that had been in the works for about 18 months, and it was going to allow this new water, everybody said it was water bottling. They said, no, it isn't. It's just bottling. We don't know what it's going to be yet. Okay, so in 1 week, they were going to sign this contract for 5 million gallons of water a day for 30 years, and it just seemed like an enormous amount of water. And for a long period of time, because even though we do have a lot of water here in this Everett system that comes from the Sultan Basin and the, Chaplain Reservoir, and there is a lot of water, but we do know that our glaciers are melting, that we're going to have more rainfall in some seasons, but droughts, more droughts in other seasons, and we have a growing population. So we just need to be very, very cautious about how we disperse this water, how we dispense it. Okay, so the story goes on that we heard that we're supposed to have this contract signed in 1 week, and so just serendipitously, I had a conversation with a man who was the program chairman of the first Legislative District Democrats, Jim Ekus. And I was talking to Jim about this. It was 2 days or 1 day before their monthly meeting. And I said, Jim, do you know about this? And I told him about this, you know, what was happening. And he said, no, would you come and talk to our meeting tomorrow night? Because we don't have a program. And I said, you bet. So I got every bit of information that I could. And some of the women here in Everett who are on the it's one of the organizations that protects the water resources of Everett. I'm sorry, I can't remember the name, but there are about five women, and they're real, really dynamic women. We met.
Someone listening would remember.
Some of them are listening. I remember some of their names.
So let me give you the phone number, 425-303-9070, if you remember the name of the organization.
Yeah, and Marilyn Boyd and Valerie Steele and some of their favorite friends got together and got the contract, and we read it. We took all that information to the first Legislative District Democrats who are located near Mill Creek. I mean, they meet near Mill Creek. And that night, after we told what was happening, we passed a clipboard, and about 15 or 20 people signed up to help us do what we could to educate about this and to stop this bottling plant. So from that point on, we went to the Port Gardner Neighborhood Association. We got unanimous support from the board of the Pilchuck Audubon Society and other groups. And within... So the first thing we did, at the advice of Ruth Kaplan, who's in Washington, D.C., and who has worked on that Freiburg issue for against Nestle in Freiburg, Maine, Poland Spring, she's a longtime water defender. She said, Rebecca, she said, the first thing you have to do is get a delay. And so we all went to City Council, and we signed in, and we talked about why we felt that this should not be rushed. Because within a week or two, they were going to do this, and there had been no public information, no public process, no opportunity to speak out for or against it. And so we got a delay of a week or two, and we just kept going to city council and writing. Then the letters started. We had a few letters to the editor. Even one man from Granite Falls wrote a marvelous letter saying, what is going on here? This is insane. Okay, so on April, I think it was the 14th or 15th, after it was supposed to have been signed a month earlier, Mayor Stephenson decided that the deal was off, and the headline read, City to Tethys, colon, no deal. And so it was a huge relief, but we knew you have to be vigilant with water bottling companies or beverage bottling companies. And so we didn't know that they were working a deal with Anacortes. And they went up there, and in October, they got a deal signed with the City Council of Anacortes, excuse me.
And are you aware of anything different with regard to Evergreen that is changing the process? Is it because it's is there a different process because mm-hmm. it's on port
yes.
land?
Yes.
But it's Everett Water that they would be
yes.
siphoning off.
That's right. It would be the same water source, the water City of Everett's water. But it's my understanding, and I do not know a lot about this, but it's my understanding, and some of the people on our Defenders of Water team here in the Snohomish County area tell me that it's much easier to get things expedited through the port. There's not as much public process as there would have to be if it were open in the city government. So, and they are, I mean, you know, the ports, one of their missions is to develop economically, to mm-hmm. do economic development. So the gentleman I talked with today, I talked with somebody at the port, and I could, at the port, they said there was nothing new that they knew about, that nothing had happened. And that it was just, as far as they knew, the woman I talked with at the port today said, no, I don't think anything's happened at all. But then when I called the county, the gentleman I talked with said, oh, yes, they're going to be meeting in May. And they're planning to ship 15 million bottles a month. And they're going to have a 100,000 square foot bottling plant. And that's a lot of water. And I don't know how many years of water they're going to be given or allocated. But I'd like to, if I could, jump in and talk about the question of who owns the water.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's save that for a break. We're going to take a break.
Okay.
We'll go and take a look at that traffic one more time.
Okay.
We'll get back and we'll talk about who owns the water. We will talk about the ecological concerns of bottled water and find out where people can go to get more information about this. All of that will come up, and you're welcome to join our conversation this afternoon as we are talking about bottled water, and we're talking with Rebecca Wolf. Our phone number is 425-303-9070. We'll continue our conversation after we take a brief break here on KSER.
It's 55 degrees at a few seconds before 4:40. You're listening to Sound Living on Community Radio 90.7 FM, KSER, Everett. There is a problem in traffic to let you know about. If you're headed southbound on 405, there is a disabled vehicle in the Bothell-Everett Highway junction area. That's Highway 527, the Bothell-Everett Highway on southbound 405. It's impacting traffic a little bit in the area. Right now, Bellevue-Everett is 46 minutes. Seattle-Everett is 57 minutes. Everett into Bellevue is 31 minutes. And Everett into Seattle is 45 minutes. 5 o'clock, Democracy Now! Comes your way. But in the meantime, it's Sound Living with our conversation with Rebecca Wolf and Ed Bremer.
And we're back on Sound Living this afternoon. The phone number is 425-303-9070. If you'd like to join this conversation, we're talking about bottled water. We're talking about the myths and realities of bottled water and how we got sold a bill of goods that the water that we drink out of a bottle is better than the water that comes out of your tap. And you mentioned who owns the water. As I understand it, in the state of Washington, I can't speak for other states, but the water that falls on your house, the water that goes into your gutters, the water that runs off your property into the street belongs to the state. Is mm-hmm. that correct?
That's my understanding. One of the things that I would love to do and hope to do is to understand more about water law, but it's a huge area of the law, and it's different from state to state. But there is something called the public trust doctrine, and that requires the state to manage our natural resources in a way that benefits the public. And so it seems to me that eventually what we need is something in the state law that will protect our natural resources, our water. And I'm not sure we have that because municipalities are corporations, and they, you know, they have certain rights, and they have water rights. Some of them, like Everett, have a senior water right, which was somehow obtained before 1905. Anything after 1905 is called a junior water right. And I'm not an expert on water law, but I really find I have a need to learn a lot more about it. But it seems to me that originally the public trust doctrine was designed for aquatic waters, you know, like the tidelands and that sort of thing. But there's a man, I think it was Sachs was his last name, and he's written about the public trust doctrine, and he thinks it could extend to fresh water and the water that we need for survival. So this is something that's pretty interesting, and I hope a lot of people will look into it, and let's talk about it. Let's get, we're, you know, about this organization called Port Gardner Pulling Together. 53 organizations came together. That group would be a really good group to bring people together and talk about. Let's learn about our rights. What are our rights with our in relationship to our water? And what do we need to do as citizens to help protect it?
Okay, well, we have a caller here, and I apologize. We are having some technical difficulties here, but we've got Rhonda in Marysville join us this afternoon. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi.
Yeah, we have a question.
I don't have a question so much as to really be in support of what she's saying, because I have been involved with water, done some studying in regard to this, and some of my concerns in particular is the groundwater she was talking about and losing our aquifer, and that we here in the state of Washington have only recently in the last couple of years come out of a drought of 8 years, and our reservoirs were way below historical lows. It had never, ever happened in the history of our state. And our population is only growing. And I really agree with her. There is a huge concern. There's the appearance that we have as much water as we could ever want because we have so much rain, and we've had heavy rainfall this year. But even so, across the board, if you'll look back and research our history, because of the logging that they have been doing across our state, we are losing our water. We are losing our moisture. Our jet stream has gone up into Vancouver, Canada, and so we don't have the same seasons. We don't have the same seasonal proportions. We actually have had more logging here along the Cascades and through our state than they have down in Brazil in the rainforest. And it's changing our climate.
So are you taking steps? Are you living differently now than, another way to phrase that, are you now or have you ever been a user of bottled water, I guess?
No, I am not a user of bottled water, and I am concerned about the things even that the city is putting in our water. They just recently, I live in Marysville, and just recently they have added this new chemical that is in the family of chlorine, but it's much more potent, and it's highly toxic. Mm-hmm. And they will say that, well, you know, per this millionth mm-hmm. of a percent or whatever. But tests have shown that over long terms with animals, they develop all kinds of cancers, and it affects them in different ways. And in our systems, one of the things that they put in there is anti-rust formulas. There's all kinds of things in our water that we deal with on a daily basis that in some ways they're trying to protect us and protect our community and that type of thing. That
well, you've just touched on one of the arguments that the bottled water companies use to convince us to use bottled water, that they filter all of those those chemicals out, that they take all of those chemicals out of the water. So what you are drinking out of your tap is not as safe as the water that comes from your bottle. Rebecca?
How would we know? It isn't tested in the same way that public water is. And if people are concerned, people can do what I do, and that is I bought a really good filter that is installed under my kitchen sink. And for drinking water, it goes through quite an extensive filtering process and improves the flavor. I have concerns too, and I think that's another thing we need to address in our communities. We need to find out what's in our water, and we need to make changes if we need to find out. Of course, we want it pure, and something may have to purify it if it's not pure enough as it goes through the system. But I think that's just something we do need to look into. We had a program in Anacortes recently, and there was a young man who was really concerned about the fluoride in his water in Anacortes, and he installed a tank, some kind of a system that cost about $3,000 because he didn't want his family ingesting that fluoride.
So, and the chlorine. They have showed the chlorine is very damaging to all of our natural biological anaerobic type of bacteria that live in our gut. And it's causing all kinds of allergies, all kinds of digestive problems. We are not assimilating our food. There is a company in North Seattle that I use their product. It's a system like you mentioned. You put under your sink, or you can buy a larger one. It will filter your whole house, so even what you shower with is truly pure water. Mm-hmm. And so you can buy that. It costs a bit of money, but it's not that expensive, especially for how long it lasts. And you change the filter anywhere from 6 months to once a year. And mm-hmm. it's worth it, and you know it's pure.
Well, I guess if you were spending $4 on a bottle of water, that would add up pretty quick to that mm-hmm. the cost of that filtering system.
Mm-hmm. It sure would.
Rhonda, I want to thank you for your call. We've got another caller we want to go to, but I want to thank you for joining us this afternoon on Sound Living. You make some very good points, and I appreciate that you brought them up.
Great. I'd like to make one more before I leave. One of the things I've been highly concerned about with what's happening with all of their pumping all the oil out of the ground and these companies, the gas companies that are going around and using pressure to blow the gas
fracking.
Out.
Fracking. You're now, talking about fracking.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Fracking, which is now coming out and joining with the water.
Right.
Well, the hydrological pressures within the earth are changing. And people aren't talking about that. Nobody's really looking at that yet. And that's a real concern for me. It's like over in Asia now, they've totally changed these river flows and the weight on their continent from how they have changed those flows. And here we're pumping so much up out of the ground. And that actually can affect the planet and the balance and the spin. We have kind of a delicate climate going on here, and we're really not recognizing it anyway, so that's a concern for me.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate your listening, and thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Sure. Bye
now.
I was just going to say that's a great topic for another program, Ed.
We will look into that. We will look into that. And in the meantime, William from Machias is with us. William, I appreciate your patience this afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Well, you know, we're talking about water.
Yes, we are.
And I can't believe, you know, P.T. Barnum would laugh. We're buying water that we don't know where it's coming from. And the water you got in your property or you're getting from your city is probably just as good.
Yeah.
But I have a well. And this is one thing I want to tell people. You know, there's outfits or people that are going around gathering up wrecked cars and all this stuff and putting it in their backyards. That antifreeze, that oil goes into the ground and gets into the water that the mountains has given us. And when these people do that, and nobody says a word about it and doesn't turn them in, you're poisoning your water.
And that holds true for the pesticides that we put on our lands, the stuff that we use to kill dandelions. All of that goes right back into that groundwater, and a lot of it is not filtered out.
Absolutely.
Can you drink
it? I had to call in the state because of my neighbor wanted to have a wrecking yard uphill from me. I don't want his antifreeze in my well.
Can you drink your well water? You obviously are drinking your well water, because there are many whose water has a brackish taste and it just isn't potable, but you are able to drink your water.
My water is good.
Good.
All right. Well, William, you bring up some very good points. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
All right. What about people who are living with well water that they can't drink? They have no choice. They're not on a municipal water supply. They have no choice to drink bottled water, do they?
No, they can use, well, they can use their well water, but they just have to have it tested, and they do have to be vigilant, like this man, like William, to protect the property around, you know, the acreages around them, to make sure that they're not polluting. And big stores, big box stores, do a lot, you know, there's a lot of toxicity that comes out, like, from their gardening departments, all these fertilizers and pesticides and things, and we have to be careful around those areas too, that the water is not contaminated. But groundwater and well water, a few years ago I lived on an island in the San Juans, and we were fortunate. We had a 382-foot well, and it was really abundant, nice, fresh, pure water. We had it tested periodically. But there were other places on the island that had practically no water. And I remember when I went to the first community meeting, I was not as aware of water shortages. And I remember I was helping in the kitchen at one of the functions, and I let the water run a few seconds too long, and a woman snapped at me, and she said, "We don't waste a drop here." And it really stayed with me, and I do occasionally waste a drop, but I try not to, you know, try to turn it off when we're not using it. So we just have to be really aware and vigilant, and this man, like William, needs to really pay attention to what's around that could, you know, could have. And look, I mean, we look at Hanford. Oh my gosh, that's another topic. If you're talking about water, groundwater.
Well, let's take another call. Let's take a call from Gary in Everett, joining us here on Sound Living this afternoon. Gary, thank you for joining us.
Yes, hi. I was wanting to express a similar sentiment to the lady I think was talking in Marysville. You know, I agree that using water, bottled water, is not at all a good idea. But I vehemently object to, you know, thinking that, you know, tap water that's been put, that you put fluoride into and some format of chlorine into, is necessarily, in the long run, you know, safer for you physically. I mean, I like you, I have a filtration system in my home because, you know, I don't want to use bottled water, but at the same time, you know, I don't trust, you know, the amount of fluoridation and chlorine that's in tap water. So I mean, I think, you know, to de-emphasize one danger over the other is not wise.
Well, you know, one thing in defense of fluoride and chlorine is why it's there in the first place. One, the water that you drink out of your tap is traveling through some pretty old piping. Up in Northern Everett, some of the pipes are 100 years old plus. So it needs to be added to the water as a protection for the person who's going to consume it at the end. And the fluoride has been proven to be, you know, valuable for keeping dental bills down at a future point in your life.
Well, I would dispute that. I mean, there's a lot of evidence to the contrary about fluoride. I mean, fluoride is a known toxin. It's not something that should be consumed internally in great quantities over long periods of time. And fluoride is also, I suppose I should be specific, fluoride in terms of, you know, sodium fluoride, there's a less toxic calcium fluoride, but there's no, there have been studies that have shown that communities that have fluoride in their water versus communities that don't have fluoride in their water don't have significant different, dental hygiene outcomes.
Well, I think you've picked a topic for another program.
Probably true.
I'm making lists here. So thank you for joining us, Gary. I appreciate your input, and I thank you for participating this afternoon.
Okay.
Gary from Everett's joining us here on Sound Living this afternoon. We're coming to the end of the program. There are a number of events that are going on. There's a particular project that you are involved with that I want to give you the opportunity to talk about. But as far as the Evergreen Water Bottling Project, is there a group that is taking a leadership role in dealing with this that you are aware of?
Oh, I think that the Sierra Club, the Washington State chapter, our Water and Salmon Committee is definitely taking a leading role, but it's definitely a team effort. And we have a really terrific Water and Salmon Committee in the Washington State chapter. And we are working in tandem with these other groups in Snohomish County. And also we're getting a lot of expertise from the Alliance for Democracy. As I mentioned, Ruth Kaplan, Nancy Price is our national, she's a co-chair, and she's had years of experience working against water, you know, thieves. I'm sorry, water thieves.
Well,
but also one other one is the United Nations Association of Greater Seattle. Those three are pretty, and then we have, like Audubon people mm-hmm. like that.
And are they are watching the agenda of the Port Commission? Certainly, if they're going to take Everett Water, I would think the Everett City Council would have some sort of an involvement in this. Are there organizations that are watching those agenda to see if it comes up?
Well, it's been a bit informal. I have a long list of people, and I have it. The heading is Defenders of Water in Snohomish County. We also have another list, Defenders of Water in the Skagit River Basin, that we're working with people up there in the Skagit River Basin. All that water, by the way, comes from the river for Anacortes.
And you have a couple of events that are going on that you want
really
to make
really quickly,
mention.
Yeah. Today's Earth Day. Happy Earth Day again. Tonight at 6:30, if people are interested, they can go to the REI at Alderwood. And we're going to have a Sierra Club program called Resilient Habitats. And our speaker is going to be the National Volunteer Co-Lead developing this Resilient Habitats campaign. And this is a very interesting initiative. And so please come and join us if you can tonight at REI at 6:30 upstairs. The other event is on April 28th in Seattle in the U District. And that's at University Temple United Methodist Church. And it's called When the Wells... I'm sorry. Excuse me, I'm sorry. When the Wells Run Dry, the Water-Soil Connection. We're going to have David Montgomery, a geomorphologist who has written the book called Dirt, The Erosion of Civilizations. And we're going to have Dr. Stephen Gilbert, who's a neurotoxicologist. So these people who are interested in water toxins and toxicology really should come to this 28th of April meeting. And that will be at 7 o'clock at that church, University Temple United Methodist Church, 7 to 9 p.m. And we would love to have you. And there's no charge for either of these events.
And how does someone get a hold of you?
Email rr.wolf with an E at Comcast.net.
rr.wolf?
Yes.
With an E at Comcast.net.
Right. So rr.wolfe at Comcast.net.
Rebecca Wolf, thank you for joining us this afternoon. It's been a pleasure.
It has been interesting. Thank you.
Obviously, we've only scratched the surface, so we'll have to have you back, and we'll continue the conversation, and we'll take a more closer look at other aspects of water. Next week on Sound Living, my guest will be David South, and our topic will be arsenic and Old Everett. We will be talking about the cleanup that the Washington State Department of Ecology is doing to remove arsenic from the yards and other land in South Everett. David South is the senior engineer with the Department of Ecology's Toxics Cleanup Program, and he will be our guest, and we will be talking about the North Everett cleanup next week on Sound Living, a production of the News and Public Affairs Department, made possible this week with engineering help from John Jameson. I'm Ed Bremmer. Thank you for listening us here on KSER. We'll be right back.